Shalom Habarim. Hello, friends. Oh, you look tired already. Okay. I heard a story this week about a young man who absolutely loved nativity scenes. It was like his favorite thing in the world. He loved that image. So when he got old enough, he decided he was going to find a job where he could always be around nativity scenes. He first went to a factory where they made these things. He went and he found somebody that was forming the clay figures and then painting each one individually. He went to this factory and he asked them, "Can I have a job?" And unfortunately, they were not hiring. He went to plan B. He decided, well, if I'm going to not be able to make nativities, maybe I can sell them. So he went to a distributor, a wholesale distributor, and he asked them, "Do you have any work? I would love to sell nativities." And unfortunately, they didn't have any jobs available. Well, this guy came to his last opportunity, plan C, if you will. And he said, "Well, maybe I can be a part of a live nativity scene. Maybe I can go and I can be one of the characters, maybe Joseph or one of the wise men, the shepherds. Oh, I'll even be one of the animals if I have to be in this live nativity scene." And unfortunately, when he applied, there were no jobs available for him there. Which just goes to show you that there are sometimes no stable jobs. I know. Yeah, okay, all right. I know, it was a stretch. It's my birthday, you have to laugh. So last Sunday, Sonia, the children, and I were away. We had a wedding last Sunday on the fourth Sunday of Advent. It's a totally normal time to have a wedding. That's what people do, and that's okay. It's not like it's the busy time of season for me or anything like that. Fourth Sunday of Advent, we traveled all the way to Goshen, Indiana, where my wife's final cousin got married. I believe he was the last of 17 first cousins. Is that right? I tried to count them. I often missed one or two. 18, sure. 17, 18. Oh, I was at one of the weddings I was a part of to my wife. Anyways, we went for the 17th or 18th final wedding in the family. Finally got them all married off. And as we were there, of course, we wanted to take in a wedding service. Very glad to be there. I make it sound like it was a really rough thing. Glad to be there to see David get married. David and Cindy have begun their life together. And of course, they did what every couple does. They went to Disney World to celebrate their honeymoon. So we enjoyed our time in Goshen. We worshiped last Sunday at Waterford Mennonite Church. You familiar with Waterford? We attended there. One of my friends from seminary, Cindy Voth, is an associate pastor. And the children's pastor, Katie, is also a friend of mine. I had met her along the way. And Katie was the one who preached this past Sunday. And I'm stealing some of her materials with her permission today. I've got some slides that she shared. I'm going to be using them. I found it very interesting because Katie starts off her sermon by talking about her growing up years. And she says that as she was growing up, a huge part of her family Christmas tradition was nativity scenes. They would often have multiple nativity scenes around the house. 4, 5 different nativity scenes in various different rooms throughout the house. In the living room, they'd have a couple. In the dining room, they'd have more. Each child had their own nativity scene in their bedrooms. So when she got older, when she moved out of her home, she got married, she assumed that she would just continue this tradition. She and her husband would have nativity scenes around the house as well. But what she didn't foresee was that she married into a family of rearrangers. Rearrangers. Now, she should have seen this coming, she said to us. She should have seen it coming whenever she first went to her family, her in-laws' home on Christmas time, a couple years before they got married, and she found that they had this train with these individual cars, and each car spelled out the word Noel. But when she had arrived, someone rearranged those cars to spell out the name Leon. Totally normal thing to do. So this is in her in-laws' home. She and her husband got married. I'll come to that in just a second. She and her husband got married, and they were gifted this beautiful nativity set with these hand-carved or whatever they are out of clay, these individual pieces. They put it on the mantle. She put it on the mantle, and then the next day she woke up to find that it wasn't the baby Jesus at the center of the nativity. Things had been changed slightly. Now Mary and baby Jesus were off to the side, and it was this young shepherd boy with the sheep at the center of attention. That's kind of weird, but she let it go. The next day she woke up and things had been changed once again. No longer was the baby sheep and the young shepherd the center. There now was a sheep in the middle of it all. And this sheep seems to have something very important to say. He's standing on the back of the camel so he can get everyone's attention. So that was day two. On the third day of Christmas, she woke up to find this. There was a new visitor. A googly-eyed Santa Claus had shown up at the nativity scene. This was a creature that one of their friends had carved by hand. And I'm not sure why. He looks jaundiced there. His eyes are kind of yellow. Something's not right with that guy there. Maybe he needs a little more sleep. Third day of Christmas. She wakes up the next day. And obviously there must be an open invitation because more characters start showing up at the nativity scene. The next day, a friendly penguin shows up. The following day, the wise men show up, and they bring with them the wisest of all wise men. Of course, I'm speaking of Master Yoda. After Yoda shows up, all sorts of characters begin coming to this nativity scene. The following day, she wakes up to this. A Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, various creatures, characters from around the world. I think that's Chewbacca down there as well. Chewbacca, more penguins, because you can never have too many penguins at the nativity scene. Well, after they had this large gathering, they decided that they would have a parade the next day. Totally normal thing to do, but, I mean, have you ever been to a parade? These things are long, they are tiring, and the next day, Joseph just had to take a nap. Now, you may see these images, and you might feel like this is a little distasteful. Like, this is not right. Like, this is Jesus' birth. Like, why are we messing with it? That's just disrespectful of the whole event. But I've seen much worse. This is one that I've seen floating around, and this was not Katie's. Bill and Ted show up, as well as a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and I don't know why Batman's on the top of this nativity. Now, does this seem a little disrespectful to you? Maybe a little bit. Does it seem a little funny to you? Maybe a little as well. I thought it was kind of disrespectful, but then when we started wandering around the city of Goshen, we came across a very large nativity scene, and all at once some other people decided to get involved as well. I don't know if you can tell or not, but there is a young boy sleeping behind baby Jesus on the straw, and there is a young woman riding the camel. If you can't see there, now you know who it is. That was our violist this morning, decided to participate in the nativity scene. Disrespectful? Yeah, maybe a little. Kind of funny? Maybe a little bit more. But what you expected? No, this is not what you expect to see in a nativity scene. What I want to talk about today, with my time with you this morning, is that Jesus is a master disruptor. We look at these nativity scenes, there's things that we expect to see. Call out, what do you expect to see in a nativity scene? You expect to see baby Jesus. Thank you for starting with that one. You expect to see baby Jesus and Joseph and Mary. Thank you. Shepherds and sheep. A manger. Angels. The wise men. I was looking for the wise men yet. That's what we expect to see. But when I look at these images that my friend Katie shared last Sunday, it's all unexpected. You don't expect to see Yoda at the manger scene, do you? No. You don't expect to see Santa Claus. You don't expect to see a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Our expectations are disrupted. They are disturbed a bit. Now, I say that that's somewhat weird, somewhat iffy, but I also think it's just right. Because I think theologically, Jesus comes in and he disturbs things. We attempt to domesticate Jesus. We think we know what to expect. But Jesus came in and he changed all of that. Jesus is the master of disruption. So what I want to do today is let's start by looking at that manger scene. And then we're going to try to get into some of these disruptive attitudes of Jesus along the way. we begin with the manger scene, and you know, every time we see a picture of the manger, it's always this nice, cute little barn set off by itself somewhere. That's probably not the way it actually was. I don't have a picture here. I should have put a picture on the screen. We don't have the real image, I think, of what happened in those days in our minds. Because the barns that the people had in the first century would have been like in their basements of their house. They would have been attached to their homes. So when Joseph and Mary went from house to house asking for a place to stay, someone essentially said, you know, I have no room in the house, but you can stay downstairs with the animals. And the reason for having the animals in an attached part of the house was because it's a lot easier to care for them. And in the winter, they provide heat. I don't know what you do with all the methane gas, but you know, you probably don't want to be lighting candles with all that around. No. But this is the way they had it. They probably didn't understand that at the time, but it was a part of the home. Now, we talked about all the people that were there that first Christmas day. We talked about the shepherds and we talked about the wise men. But if you look at these texts, the text that Danny read, how many wise men did you mention in that? There were none, right? You only find the wise men in Matthew's gospel. But if you read Matthew's gospel, how many shepherds are there? There's none in Matthew's gospel. So the way it is, it seems like these things are happening at different times. It's just very unlikely that the shepherds and the wise men all show up at the same time. The wise men may not have showed up until about 12 days later, on a day that we refer to as Epiphany Sunday. 12 days after the birth is when we traditionally in the church say that the wise men arrived. That's why we celebrate the 12 days of Christmas. So Epiphany Sunday will be next Sunday. We'll focus on the wise men and their arrival then. The story of the shepherds, they show up in Luke's gospel, and they arrive just as Jesus is being born. So there's a number of things going on that just don't line up with our expectations. But the thing that I really want to point out is not just the images that go on with this day, but how about the songs that we sing? Curtis, you picked some very good songs, and I really love the song Silent Night, but I just don't get why we think that was a silent night. Silent Night, I gathered around a church and I lit candles and I sang Silent Night this past Tuesday as well. But if you think about it, I believe that it's possible that Jesus didn't cry when he was born because he's God in human flesh. Whatever, he can raise people from the dead. He can surely be born and not cry. But remember, this was thousands of years ago, way before they had spinal blocks and things like epidurals. And I was present for the birth of each of my children. So I can pretty well guarantee you that this was not a silent night. There was screaming, there was crying, there were things going on. So rather than thinking of it as a silent night, let's focus on the disruption. So imagine yourself to be Joseph 2,000 years ago. Joseph was a young man and he was a carpenter. He was out doing his thing. He's building homes. He's building walls. He's doing the things that carpenters do. Now, he had recently become engaged to this young woman, Mary. He had paid the betrothal price to her father. It was very common in those days that when a person got engaged, during their engagement period, they would build their own house where their family would live. So I see Joseph in my mind, every day that goes by, he's building this house block by block, stone by stone. Every time he's mixing up mortar and putting it on there, he's thinking about the house that he's building and the family that he is about to start. He has these huge expectations for what will happen in his life. But then word gets back to him. There's some disruption. Word gets to him that his betrothed is pregnant. And Joseph knows that that's not his child. Surely this would mess with his expectations. Surely this throws off the plans that he has. And even after he's told by the angel that this is actually the child of God that your soon-to-be wife is bearing, even after that, you still have to think this is going to mess with his plans. And who expected to be raising the Son of God? You know, he didn't get married or engaged to Mary expecting that they would together raise the seed of God. This was a huge disruption to Joseph's plan. But we look at Mary, and Mary seems to understand that this child within her womb is going to be a disruption. When she visits her cousin Elizabeth, this child within her is something special, and she knows it. and Mary decides to sing. These are the words of Mary's song from Luke chapter 1. Mary says, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down the rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestor." It seems that Mary knew from the very beginning that this child within her would be a disturber. He would take things, expectations, and he would change them. Now, is a Yoda in a nativity scene a little disrespectful? I don't know if it is or not. Some people here think, yeah, that's kind of disrespectful. But the point that I'm making is we have too often domesticated Jesus. We too often think we know what to expect. But Jesus is, from the very beginning, always was and always will be, a disturber of our plans. All right, well, let's bring this into the 21st century a bit here. Some of you may know the name Shane Claiborne. Are you familiar with Shane Claiborne? One or two of you are? Okay. Shane Claiborne, I first met Shane Claiborne about 16 years ago when I was a seminary student. And I went to a chapel one day, that's what you do, Tuesdays and Thursdays, every day at Eastern Mennonite Seminary, you can go to a chapel service if you'd like. I walk up there and there's this tall hippie standing at the door. He's probably a good 6'2", skinny as a rail. He had brown clothes that appeared to be made out of burlap. I found out later that he made them himself. He had long dreadlocks at the time and these huge black-rimmed glasses. And he talked with a slow southern drawl that you only can pick up when you grow up in East Tennessee. My first impression of Shane Claiborne, who is this tall, lanky, southern-born hippie? Well, I soon learned a little bit more about his story as I heard him talk that first chapel meeting. He talked about how he had spent time serving in Calcutta with Mother Teresa. He spent a period, I think, 3 months or so over there with her. He would later go to Iraq and work with Christian peacemaker teams. And this is a guy that was so unique because not because of where he'd been, but where he chose to live. I would later find out that Shane Claiborne had at one time been a graduate student at Princeton Theological Seminary. And while he was studying there at Princeton, he decided he was just going to leave it all. And he went to live among the poorest of the poor in Philadelphia. He moved out of his home, gave up his studies, and moved into Camden, New Jersey. He lived with the poor people. He saw this as his ministry. He was in seminary to become some sort of a pastor or a priest, and he said, "You know what? I can be doing ministry right now. My schoolwork is getting in my way." He gave all that away and lived with people who many of us would cross the street to avoid if we met them. He started breaking bread with people who have very little bread to offer. He started loving people that many people deemed to be unlovable. He chose to live with these people. Now, I remember very little about what he said that first time that I heard Shane Claiborne speak, but he shared with us a story that still sticks in my mind 16, 17 years later. He talked about how when he was giving a talk, like he was giving that day, he was speaking to a bunch of people, and somebody came up to him after the service, and they said to Shane, they said, "Hey, when I found Jesus, he really straightened my life out." And Shane, with that little southern drawl, looked at the guy with a smile on his face. He said, "Really? Because when I met Jesus, he really messed my life up." And he meant that in a good way. He did what he had never expected to do. He was on a path that many people saw as normal. Instead, he did something that we never would have expected, moving in with the poorest of the poor. So Shane has written a number of books. He has written a number of articles. One of my favorite articles, at least the title of it, is called, What If Jesus Meant That Stuff? What a great article. What If Jesus Meant That Stuff? He had a really popular book called The Irresistible Revolution. And in that book, he has this quote. It's very simple, but yet I also think very profound. Here's a picture of Shane with the quote that I want to read for you this morning. Shane Claiborne says in The Irresistible Revolution, he says, God comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable. I'll read that again. God comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable. Now, how often do we focus on that first part in the church? We hear that, right? That's common. You know, in our bulletins, we talked about the Messiah sing-along that's coming up. And in the Messiah, there's this popular line lifted out of Isaiah chapter 40, verse 1. The Messiah sings this part, comfort ye my people, saith your God. You've heard that before? I won't sing it for you, unless you want me to. All right, I won't sing it. We know that God is a comforter. We know that there's no atheists in foxholes, right? This is this idea that you need this God with you, a comforter. AA or any other 12-step program, you begin by acknowledging that there is something out there greater than you, and you are powerless against your addiction. The only way that you can find comfort and healing is because of God. So we in the church, we know that first part. We know that God comforts those who are disturbed. But we must remember that God disturbs those who are comfortable. God disturbs those who are comfortable. As we prepare to enter into 2020, can you believe that? The year 2020. As we prepare to enter into 2020, I realize that many of us, myself included, are quite comfortable. I have my circle of friends, the people that I hang out with, the people that I socialize with on a regular basis. I am very comfortable with that group. But sometimes I wonder, is God calling me to reach out to other people, to meet new people, to befriend somebody who has no friends? And maybe you're in the same place. Maybe God is calling you to get out of your comfort zone and start spending more time with other people, to learn to show the love of Christ to them. Maybe you're very comfortable with the amount of time you have. You have a certain amount of freedom. You can do the things you want. You can watch television every night or play golf every weekend. There's nothing at all wrong with that. Maybe you have this time on your hands. Well, you're very comfortable with that time. God is perhaps calling you to do something more with your time. God is disturbing your comfort. Perhaps you're being called to coach your son's basketball team at the YMCA or become more involved with ministries like the Valley Mission. We have time when we are comfortable. God is calling us to disturb us to do something different. I believe that God is and always has been a God who comforts those who are distressed, comforts those who are disturbed. But far too often we skip over the fact that God disturbs those who are comfortable. And often we can be both. We can be disturbed, we can be comfortable, and God is there for us all. So I come back one more time to that nativity scene. And this is what we've come to expect. But every now and then, someone throws in a Yoda. Someone throws in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. And it disturbs our expectation. Well, my friends, we serve the master disruptor, the master disturber, who comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable. Please join me in prayer. God, we are here today because we are seeking you. We seek to know you in a new way, in a closer way, in a dearer way. And Lord, for those of us who are comfortable, we give you praise and thanks, for you are the giver of all things that are good. But we know, Lord, that you have not called us just to sit here in our comfort. You are calling us to be disturbed, disturbed by the things around us, the things that are not the way you want them to be. May we befriend those who have no friends. May we seek to love those who have not been loved. May we be disturbed in 2020 as we seek to bring your kingdom here on earth. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.